I'm Jonathan Hirsch, and this is Arrivals. Stories of migration, transformation, and change. The program that explores what we do when what we've done is a thing of the past. I remember very clearly where I was on September 11, 2001. My family was living on a farm in a remote area of Northern California. The television in our house was just a piece of furniture. There was cloth draped over it. We never used it. And in those days, we'd rather watch the sun come up over the bluff in the distance and over the walnut groves that lined the valley instead of the news. But on that morning, a friend called to tell us that our country had been attacked and that we'd better turn the TV on. So my dad and I went digging around in storage for a cheap rabbit ear antenna set. We wiped the dust off the screen of the TV, and through the static we saw the burning buildings of a city I'd never been to, a city I scarcely knew to be an American one. Later that morning, we drove down to San Francisco, and I remember being stuck in traffic and for the first time feeling part of a very big place. Peering into the interiors of the adjacent cars, listening to reports on the radio, knowing that no matter the dial, all of our ears were now trained on the same story. Not just California or even the West Coast or the United States, but the world. We were all changed that day. But for those who called New York City home, who lived and worked in Lower Manhattan during that time, the impact ran much deeper. This is the story of a man who, through the tragedy of that day, found his true calling.
My name is Nay Mello. I was born in the Bronx and grew up in the Bronx. Went to high school on the Upper East Side. After college, I moved down to the East Village. So I'm a New York City guy, you know, which is rare. I feel like everyone from New York is from different places, but I'm actually from here. And I worked on the trading floor. It was exciting. You get into work like 6:30, 7 a.m., and then you just see people, just all this activity. At the time that I was working there, it was 97, 98. So this was the whole internet, people becoming millionaires, opening a .com, starting a .com, which you don't even know what the .com exactly did, but every now and then you would look over on one part of the floor, whichever desk was trading there, that particular IPO, and it would be an explosion of cheers and, you know, like, oh, great, another millionaire or another thing happened. The investment banking track, it's more of a track, you know, where you're going to be next year, the year after. It's more structured, so I decided to go over to Lehman Brothers. I want to know next year what my title will be and what my salary will be, and I kind of want to have the next couple of years laid out for me, which is one of the advantages of working for the banking side as opposed to the trading side. I hated it because at least in the trading floor, even though things weren't, I didn't know whether I was still going to be working there or not, it was always just action. There was always something happening and something that you can, it was just something that was really cool. It's like everything that happened that day was reported on that night on the news. It was something that you can see how it's impacting the world. Whereas there's just a lot of things that happen in banking that just take months. You're just working on deals, and sometimes the deals don't happen. It's just a different pace. September 11th, 2001, a Tuesday, I went into work that morning, 8 a.m. I felt the building shake. And the guy in the cubicle behind me, he runs to the window, because his cubicle was closest to the window, and he's like, oh my God, look. And we look outside the window, and the building across the street had a big hole on the side, and just debris coming out, papers, glass, just debris coming out. And the whole office went to the window, and we're looking at this building, and just like wondering what happened. We didn't see a plane go in. Said, okay, everyone just, you know, stay here. We're gonna wait further instructions from I guess the police or from someone. But for me, I just wanted to get outside. I said, okay, this doesn't look good. If there's a bomb in that building, there could be a bomb in this building. There could be, you don't know what's happening. And I just kind of wanted to get out of the building. So I went to my cubicle, just grabbed my coat and started walking out. And on the way out, I remember there was someone I worked with who was just, you know, kind of standing by her cubicle, and she's like, are you leaving? I was like, yeah, I'm leaving. She's like, okay, I'll go with you. And as we're going down in the elevator, slows and it stops. It stops for, I mean, looking back, it maybe like 30 seconds, you know, it stopped and then poof, resumed again, but it felt like 30 hours. We both looked at each other and it was like, oh my God, what just happened? Like, what's going to happen now? I mean, can we get out? Did this building just get hit? Like, what just happened? And at that point, it just hits me. I was just like, you know, if I'm going to, at this moment, die in this elevator, in this office that I didn't want to even really be in, like if this is the end right now, when I think back on my motivation for everything that I've done, it's always, I'm kind of here and I'll do something better in the future. At that moment, just wanted to change my life. And yeah, the elevator started moving again. We went back down, and we got to the lobby. And the lobby of Three World Financial Center, which is where Lehman Brothers was located, had this big atrium. And there was always like the car show, the orchid show. There was always some performance or something happening in this atrium. And there was this big glass ceiling. And that debris from the first tower started falling into that atrium. So you start seeing just pieces of the glass falling, people running. It was chaos in the lobby. And I get out through the exit, through the side. Everyone's just kind of standing outside looking up. You know, you're not inside the building and you're not seeing all this debris falling in. You just kind of go outside and things just got a little more quiet. And I see two of my friends standing on the corner. They had gone out to Starbucks, and they're standing on the corner holding their Starbucks, looking up at the first tower. And I go up to them and I'm like, guys, what happened? You know, looks like a bomb was in the building or something. And my friends are like, no. There was a plane that flew too low and hit the tower. My friends are like, oh my God, look. And we see the other plane fly directly into the other tower. And at that point, we realize it's not an accident. We stand there for a while. We're watching people jump. I mean, it was, you know, you see debris, you see paper, glass, and then I remember just realizing that, okay, that's a body that just jumped off, and it was horrible because we're there on the ground, and you know, you can see, you know, blocks away, a body land. the firemen and the police said, okay, people start moving up. And that's when my friends and I and just people that were on that corner start moving up the West Side Highway away from the World Trade Center. And at that point, I lived on 7th Street and Avenue D. So I started going across the island to get over to where I was. I look back at the towers, and then that's when I see one of them falling. To see them come down like that was just, I just remember starting to cry. After the towers came down, I then decide to walk up north to a friend's apartment. And that apartment became kind of like where a bunch of friends just kind of gathered. We just kind of gathered there, and I was there for like maybe 2 days before I went finally to my apartment.
Very rare and extraordinary one.
It is extraordinary, and therefore,
I got a call from Lehman, and they said, you know, come back. We're relocating everyone over to another building. And what they had done is that they had rented out a hotel on 7th Avenue and 42nd Street in Times Square. They rented out a Hilton, took out all the beds, put in desks, and gave us laptops and said, okay, we're working from here. And I mean, there wasn't much work. It wasn't like the markets were really doing anything. It was just, I think, I don't know, I guess I didn't want to be like the people that at that time were surrounding me who, you know, this job was their life, and you know, a tragedy happens and they have to, they think about the stuff in their cubicles, and they think about, I don't know, these things that I realized at that moment were not important. I mean, these things could have all just as easily been destroyed. And I didn't want to stay somewhere or stay in a job and like attach all these feelings and emotions to something that really wasn't important to me. At the end of the year, that's when I said, okay, I'm gonna take time off. And fortunately, it worked out that they were going to move us around, and they had asked, well, you know, if you don't want to take this new position, then we have no choice but to lay you off. And so I started 2002 completely free, without a job, but with a little bit of a cushion, maybe like, I don't know, a couple months of savings. And now I had time to figure out what I wanted to do. I took acting classes. I took up guitar again. I was walking by a Mexican restaurant, and I saw that they needed a DJ. And I walked in and I said, "I'm a DJ." And yeah, that's what I did. I took up salsa. When I was taking salsa classes, I met this girl who was also interested in taking Argentine tango classes. And I remember thinking, oh, that's really interesting. I like how people in the dance embrace each other. The music is kind of weird, but there was always something interesting about it, and I just never acted upon it. And then this girl wanted a partner for her class. And I said, okay, this will be my chance. And I went into that workshop, and it was awful. Awful because I was completely, I realized I wasn't going to pick up this dance in a weekend, or even in 6 weekends, or even in 100 weekends. I realized that I like stepped into something that was huge. I stepped into like a whole world of of the music, of the dance, of the technique, the steps. It was just the whole thing. And after that weekend, maybe I didn't get it this weekend, but I'm gonna sign up for the unlimited dance package, and I'm gonna you know, give myself another month, another 2 months, and I did that. I did that for maybe 3 or 4 months, and after 3 or 4 months, I said, okay, I need to go to the source because I need more. I mean, Buenos Aires is the home of Argentine tango, and to be in a cab and a cab driver is listening to tango and he knows the words, and to be just surrounded by it, that's when I really felt, okay, I'm in it, I'm really in it. And the milongas, the gatherings of tango there, which is full of these great dancers. Like I saw a lot of like older couples, and I saw a lot of just more like real looking people, normal people dancing amazing tango. I even debated, okay, I should just forget it all and just stay down here and figure it out. But I did come back, and I was sad. I was sad for many weeks after that. And I came back to New York. I got a job working as a cater waiter. And I did a couple of those. And at one particular one, the bartender asks me, so what's your story? You know, everyone here is a writer, a dancer, an actor. They're doing something artistic. What's your story? And I said, well, I'm kind of nothing at this point. I used to work in banking, and I left, you know, after 9/11, and recently I got into salsa and in tango. I just came back from Buenos Aires, but I'm not really sure what I want to do. And he says to me, well, you know, it's really interesting because I have a friend who left his job after 9/11, and he was able to, you know, get some assistance with his phone bill, you know, like you, because you left your job after 9/11, you can, you know, you can get some assistance from the government. So the next day, I went to the FEMA office, and they said, well, yeah, we can pay for your heating bill, maybe some assistance with your phone bill, but we can also assist you in your rent until you find a new job. And I said, well, how long is that? How long will you cover me for? And they said, well, for a year. Within 2 weeks, I got a check, you know, covering 3 months of rent. They would pay it in 3 month installments, and gave it to my landlord and went to Buenos Aires. Like I have now another year to figure this out. So I went back to Buenos Aires now with a mission. First thing I did was, aside from learning more tango, was I started a tour business. I started a tour business because people at that time were afraid to go down to Buenos Aires. But I had marketed myself and said, well, you know, I've been here. It's not that bad. I know which milongas to go to. I know which hotels are safe. I know which restaurants or which neighborhoods are safe. I would organize the hotel for them. I would organize which milongas or tango parties they would go to, and just made sure that their experience was good for the 9 or 10 days that they were there. But during this time, the people who would come on these tours, they started requesting that my partner and I teach them, because we would always offer a little review of what the teachers, these master teachers, had taught. And so then from that, people started requesting my partner and I, when we go back to the U.S., can you come and teach us here in Austin, Texas? Or can you come and teach us here in Chicago? Can you come teach us here? And that's kind of how we started getting known as teachers. That's how we started being requested as traveling teachers. this wasn't something that I planned. But then when you get the opportunity to start doing things that you like, and you realize that you would spend days, weeks, months with no pay doing it, then once you get caught up in that, then it's really hard to go back to something that you get paid for, that you get paid really well for. I'm not going back. And it's tough to tell that to people. It's tough to tell that to people, because for a while you were one of them. You know, hey, oh, you work at Lehman. Oh, I work at Morgan. Oh, I work here. And you're like one of them. And now you're not one of them. You're the tango teacher that they bring up in conversation. Oh, yeah, I have a friend who works in tango now. You know, you can become like a story. Fueled me, or what kept me going, was that moment in the elevator. When you think that you're gonna die, that's when it becomes really apparent what's important to you. And when I think about what my life has done from since 9/11 till now, if I am faced with that, the situation where it might be over for me, then I'll feel a little bit better. Like, okay, you know, I wouldn't want to die at this moment, but I did get to do this and this and this, and I had so much fun, and I made great friends, and I did something that was passionate. Like, I'll be a little more at ease with dying now than I would have been in 2001. So you do work today. You walk, your style and the words that you say. It's a new world, you say.
A special thanks to Nay Mello for sharing his story. It was recorded in his studio in Sunnyside, Queens, where he continues to teach the dance that he fell in love with. This episode of Arrivals was written, recorded, and produced in between bodega beer runs and late night takeout in the lovely East Williamsburg neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York, by me, Jonathan Hirsch, along with Nora Lind and Ben Cruz. Be sure to check out our website, where you can find pictures of Nay in action and many more Arrivals stories and images. We release a microcast featuring outtakes, extended interviews, and other ephemera from the Arrivals show called En Route, which you can find there as well, all at ARRVLS.com. And while you're there, if you would consider leaving us a review on iTunes, it really does help us spread the word. There's a link at the top of the website. Arrivals is a proud and founding member of The Herd, an audio collective of six independent producers from across North America who have banded together to share resources, promote one another's work, and to collaborate. One of the brightest, most imaginative programs out there today is Vanessa Lowe's Nocturne. Nocturne explores how thoughts, feelings, and behaviors transform in the dark.
Historically, you know, drag queens being freaks, right? And gay people in general, queer people in general, are shoved into nightlife, are shoved into places that other people aren't. A lot of times, like, a drag show starts at 11 or 12 at night.
You can listen to Nocturne and all the other Herd shows at our website, theherdradio.com. That's theherdradio.com. And for our Bay Area listeners, Nocturne and Arrivals are coming together to host the fourth Arrivals Live event in San Francisco on October 16th at Lost Church, and again on the 17th as part of the Litquake Literary Festival at the Lost Weekend Video in the Mission District of San Francisco. Information on the shows can be found on our website. I'm Jonathan Hirsch. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, may you wind up where you need to be.